It would be much easier and a lot cleaner to grow specialty food crops in water. And if those foods were labeled certified organic, you could make a lot more money growing them. Which explains why a lot of very powerful groups are demanding the National Organic Program revise its rules to allow for certified organic hydroponics. The clamoring lip of those interests leads us to ask, should foods grown in water be certified organic?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1118th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Firenze who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Hello, Jason.
It's my pleasure, sir.
Jason, do you think it would be possible, or should it be possible, for foods grown in water to be labeled organic?
I think that would depend on the quality of the water, personally.
Quality of the water.
Indeed.
Okay. Here in the studio, we have an audience. Josephine Buchanan. What do you think, Josephine?
Hi. I think it would depend on what's in the water and the quality of the food.
Okay. So you folks think it's all in the water. Well, there you go. Folks, organic farming is a messy business. Consider strawberries for one example. First, you must build up a soil with sufficient organic matter to feed the soil organisms that will feed growing strawberry plants. Then you must tend the strawberry plants as they grow and protect them from weeds and other pernicious pests. And when the berries are ripe, you must bend over and pick them. Ouch. But wait, it's not over yet. After the strawberry plants have been in the ground for a season or so, you must pull them out and replace them with another crop, otherwise the bugs will get them. Though difficult and messy, farmers go the extra mile to grow organic strawberries because consumers want to eat them instead of berries grown with pesticides. But what if you could grow organic strawberries in water instead of soil? If that were possible, you could grow strawberries in a factory, under lights, and without bugs or weeds. You could grow the plants vertically in revolving trays, and you could harvest them while standing tall. And you could grow them year-round and sell them fresh, organic strawberries in the dead of winter and make a lot of money. But the trouble is, with organic hydroponics, is that organic food should come from biologically rich soil. This belief is evident in the National Organic Standards Board's formal 2010 recommendation to the National Organic Program on the issue of organic hydroponics. So I'm going to read this really quickly to you so you get the gist, the conflict here. The organic farming method derives its name from the practice of maintaining or improving the organic matter in the soil through various methods and practices. The reason this is a central theme and the foundation of organic farming is not inherent to the organic matter itself, but is based on the importance of the organic matter to the living organisms that inhabit the soils. In other words, organic farming is all about promoting life in the soil to promote life in the growing crops. But that precludes the dream of organic hydroponics, and so groups like the Coalition for Sustainable Organics want the National Organic Program to shuck the notion of organics being tied to the soil. And so today we pause to ask, should foods grown in water be allowed the organic label? Here we have with us today two farms, one farm all the way over from Vermont and one farm in California. We're bi-coastal, as it were, and we're going to talk with them. First, we'll start with Karen Archiplay from Archie's Acres. Karen, welcome aboard.
Thank you, and I'm here with my husband, Colin.
Hello, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Good. So tell us a little bit about Archie's Acres.
Archie's Acres is a small-scale organic farm located in San Diego County. We've been certified organic since 2007. And I want to clarify some of the things that have been brought up already that biological activity that occurs in soils is not reliant on a soil particle, which means we can harness that biological activity.
Okay, but would you hold on to that, Colin, so we can just go through the introductions before we get into the definitions here? Would that be okay with you?
Hey, I'm excited and ready to go.
Okay, thank you very much. First of all, we always ask our guests who pays the way, so how does Archie's Acres fund itself?
How does Archie's Acres fund itself?
Yeah.
We grow and sell crops. We're a private entity just like any other farmer business.
There you go. That's what we like to hear. Okay, next up we have David Chapman from Vermont's Longwind Farm. David, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program.
Thank you, Michael.
Now, David, where on earth did you get that radio voice? It's pretty good.
Lucky, I guess.
Okay. I'll have to pot you down because you're way up there. So, quick question. Longwind Farm, where did you get the name, Longwind?
Oh, you know, we had to come up with a name. We're in the Connecticut River Valley of Vermont. It's very beautiful. And it does get quite a wind in the winter, and that's when we named the farm. So
okay.
It became Long Wind.
I can see it now, a long winter, a cold winter day. You can't go outside. What are we going to name this place anyway? And the wind's howling out there. Yeah, I was raised in Montana, so I know the experience pretty well. And what is it that you grow?
I grow organic tomatoes in the greenhouse, and they are grown in the soil. So,
okay, good.
Very traditional.
And who pays your way?
We wholesale our tomatoes to supermarkets, yeah.
Okay, so you're both commercial farmers.
Yeah, I have been commercial farmer since 1980, and organic all the way. We were one of the founding farms of Vermont Organic Farmers. And, you know, we were in the first year that the USDA started certifying. We were part of that, too.
Okay, good. So let's start off with a kind of a fundamental approach here. And I'll throw it out, and you guys can bat it around and see if I'm barking up the wrong tree. But it seems to me that there are two ways to feed a plant, a growing plant. One way is to feed the soil and allow those organisms in the soil then to break down that organic matter and feed the plants their nutrients. And the other way is to bypass the soil and feed the plant directly. Now, am I wrong or right? Let's start with Colin. What do you think?
No, I think you're 100% right, except for the fact that you're saying you have to feed the soil. You're not feeding...
No, I'm saying that there's two ways to feed the plant. One way is to feed the soil, and the other way is to feed the plant directly.
Except the premise of feeding the soil, you're not feeding inert soil particles. What you're feeding is the biology that exists in soils. And if you understand how that biology works, you understand that the biology can exist and many different types of medias, from compost to peat moss to cocoa fiber. And through feeding those biological organisms, they can process those inputs and feed the plant.
Exactly. Very good. That's exactly what I think. And which way do you use? Do you feed the soil or do you feed the water or feed the plant directly?
Well, we feed the biological organisms within the system. They process and mineralize organic matter.
Where do they exist, the organisms, if you're working hydroponically?
They exist all over the place, within the root zone, within the media that we use, within the compost that we incorporate. So our systems are extremely biologically diverse and active.
Good enough. And what about you, David? You're up there in Vermont. You said you work a conventional approach, which means that you're working with the soil.
Yes, absolutely. We have a large composting operation where we're composting mostly animal manures, and that is our main input into the greenhouse. Is the compost. We add a little bit of organic alfalfa meal and a little bit of sulpomag or something for potassium, but basically, it's compost.
Good. Okay. And I thought, you know, I must have been under the misimpression, but I thought certified organic was always keyed to soil. But I must be wrong, because the folks at Archie's Acres say they have been certified organic for years. So that must mean that it's not true. When we get back from this break, we will clarify what exactly are the rules for organic farming. Who sets those rules? Who controls them? And what do you think out there? Do you think food grown in water should be certified organic? That's the question of the day. We are at 831-479-1080. I am Michael Olson. I have Karen and Colin Archibald from Archie's Acres in San Diego County, and all the way crisscross Kitty Corner, we have David Chapman.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. Ah, you can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it. Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it. Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it. Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it. Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it. Metro farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it. Metro farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, thank you, Will Strickland, and we are back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking about a little bit of, I guess it's an internecine conflict in the organic world. Some want the whole concept of organic hydroponics to be certified through the National Organic Program. Others say not so fast, not so sure if food's grown hydroponically should be considered organic. And yet, from what I understand, the folks at Archie's Acres have been certified organic for a long time. How long have you been certified organic?
Over 10 years now.
Wow, okay. So the concept has been alive and well for a long time. Then what is the conflict about?
I can answer that.
Yeah, please.
This is Karen, and I know Dave Chapman's on the call with us, and so I'm really grateful for that. I actually called Dave Chapman when he started this this nationwide conversation trying to decertify farms like ours. And I actually called him and said, hey, you know, come to our farm and check it out, because I really believe an organic farmer can walk on another farm and know what they're doing in 5 minutes. Dave Chapman asked me, what do you grow? And I told him, we grow basil. That's what we're known for. And he said, that's okay. Just don't grow tomatoes. This is all about market share. That's all it is. We want to see organic food accessible to all and affordable to all, and our types of practices are very appropriate for our part of the world, which
okay.
We have the
think,
water in the world.
I guess we should turn to David now. David, I think what they're saying is that. Well, just a minute. Just a minute. Let David answer my question here. David, is it true that what you want to do is undo something that's already been done, which is to say certifying hydroponics is something that's already allowed, and what you want to do is undo that? Is that true?
Well, first, I'd say that I have no memory whatsoever of any phone call the way Karen described. But going on, I would say that the issue of hydroponics has been batted around for many years. It was voted down several times to be approved in the NOSB before the 2010 recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it was studied for a couple of years. They had a long period of public comment. And the final recommendation clearly said hydroponics should not be permitted.
Well,
at that point, there were small places like Karen and Collins being certified here and there. Since that recommendation, there have been thousands of acres certified as hydroponic by large corporations that knew full well that the recommendation existed. And the problem was that the National Organic Program didn't act on the recommendation.
Oh, so what we have is chaos. Anarchy.
We have chaos.
Oh, okay.
We have some certifiers who won't certify hydroponic, and we have others that will. So this is an area where actually there is no standard. The National Organic Program did issue a statement in 2014 saying hydroponic is allowed until further notice, but we're reviewing it.
Okay. So let's back up.
Really opposed.
Yeah. Let's back up one step for the folks who are listening to this and going, boy, this is really confusing. So, organics. Karen, let's start with you. How does this whole organic world work? It's a long time ago now, 20 years, I don't know, something like that. The federal government with the USDA developed an official definition for the word organic, right? Something like
that? Colin.
Colin?
Correct. And they created a national organic program. Part of that is a national organic standard.
Okay, let's back up. Now, what is the national organic program?
That is the USDA's branch that oversees that the regulation of that term organic.
Okay, so there's a federal government within the USDA that says we own organic and we're the ones in charge. And then there's this thing called the NOSB, the National Organic Standards Board. What's that?
The board meets, I think, twice a year, and they debate and discuss things like this to include and others to include what type of input should be allowed in organics and so forth. And I'd like to clarify that this discussion has gone in front of the NOSB a total of four times since the inception of NOSB, and three of those times they have supported the certification of hydroponic farms. And the 2010 recommendation had clear definition of what hydroponics meant, and that was a sterile system. The reason why they couldn't act on that was because all the hydroponic organic farms that I know of, what I call hydroorganics, are not these sterile systems that was defined in the 2010 recommendation, so it couldn't have been acted on.
Okay, so do you agree with David then that what we have is a situation of essential chaos at the National Organic Board or Program, NOP? I mean, if there is no rule, then it's chaos, right?
No, I don't agree with that at all. In OFPA, the Organic Farming Protection Act, which is what created the organic label on all this, it clearly states that if parts of these regulations don't apply to a farm, then that doesn't discount the farm from being organic. For instance, you may be a cattle farmer. If you're a cattle farmer, you're not growing crops. So the crop portion of OFPA doesn't apply to that farmer. So the reality of it is the standards that are in place have been certifying hydroponic farms since the inception of the National Organic Program. It was Dave and his group that went around the NOSB process to Senator Leahy to have the USDA suspend certification without changing the regulation. It is his actions with Senator Leahy that led directly to the concern of organic growers like myself to form various groups to stand up for ourselves.
Okay. David?
And we want to clarify, we want to maintain the current standards that have certified dozens of hydroorganic farms to the beginning of the National Organic
Program. Okay, so for which, as we understand it, there really is no clearly defined, or maybe there is, or maybe there isn't. David, you have an organization that wants, it seems like you want to clarify the situation, or am I wrong?
I actually do not have a formal organization. I'm just part of a very unstructured coalition of organic farmers who really object to what's happening.
What exactly, in your words, is happening?
Actually, what's happening is that there's one of the coalitions that Colin mentioned is called the Coalition for Sustainable Organics. which is purpose, if I can speak, which is, maybe it's not one of the coalitions he's talking about, but it's certainly the major lobbying group for the hydroponic organic producers. And we actually don't know who the members are because they've never shared that with the world, but they're well-funded. We know that. They have a number of professional lobbyists working. And one of those lobbyists managed to get them to testify before the Senate last month, the Senate Ag Committee. And it was really stunning because they not only, of course, defended hydroponics, but they also defended confinement animal production in organic. And so they're making common cause with the other very controversial branch of organic certification. And I think it's important to recognize that there's the organic farming movement and there is organic certification, and they're two different things.
Well, would you hold that until we come back from this break? Sure. And we'll pick that up. Sure. And as we do, I'd like to ask you, David, what you fear in allowing the other side to have their organic hydroponics. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about a little feud, or a little internecine warfare in the organic food movement with respect to how organic foods may be grown. Some would like to grow organically with hydroponics, which is to say you can grow it in water. Others say you can't do that because organics is all about the soil. What do you think? 831-479-1080 is the number today. Pick up your phone and join us right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, if you think about it for a minute, it would be kind of fun to grow food, specialty, high-value specialty crops like strawberries. If you could set them up in a hydroponic system, in a warehouse maybe, under lights, you could grow them in trays that rotate, so up and down, so there wouldn't be any weeds to deal with. You could kind of control the bugs, and you feed the plants through drip systems. It would be so clean and so kind of easy if you think about what the organic strawberries go through out here in the fields with all the messy soil and stooping over to pick the. It just seems like such a ideal way of doing things. Is it that ideal, Colin, Karen?
Well, we certainly believe so. Listen, one of the reasons why we adopted such systems is because the sustainability aspect and reducing. We're in San Diego County. We're experiencing climate change on the front end. We pay the most expensive water in the world, and we're also the largest community of certified organic farmers in the United States. So we want to maintain organic production while addressing things like lack of access to clean water, as well as food justice. These systems will help decrease the cost of food production, which will lead to decreased cost of organic food, which means the lower to middle income groups of people who can't afford. I mean, let's face it. Today's organic industry is based on limited supply that demands high value that is sold in affluent communities. And we like to see organic food available for everybody, as well as the chance to participate in the organic food production. And these systems not only enhance sustainability practices, but can help bring organic food to everybody.
Okay, let's go back to David Chapman way up there in beautiful Vermont. And you had a question, though, before we go on to my question to you, which is, why do you fear this notion? Do you remember what the question was? Your objection was, David?
Well, I could answer Colin's statement. I think that the problem with the picture that he's painting is that the food that is going to be produced won't be organic. You know, organic actually means something. It's not something that just got made up 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. The organic movement as a movement began about 75 years ago And the people who started the movement were writing books. You know, Albert Howard's, one of his books was called Soil and Health.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point of the organic movement was by creating a healthy soil and working with that. It's not actually something you create. It's something that you manage and help to build. You're a steward of the soil. And you're dealing with something that's much more complicated than you can even understand. So you're working with a very diverse ecology, and that if you're successful at that, and this was something that they observed, is that the crops were healthier, the animals were healthier, and the people were healthier.
Well, but that's not comparing. That wasn't comparing them to hydroponic food. It was comparing them to conventional farms that didn't do anything for their soil.
Yes, but of course, in a hydroponic system, they've solved that problem by getting rid of the soil. The point of conventional agriculture is you feed the plant, not the soil. And I know that Colin and Karen will say, well, we're feeding the microbiology of the water. But there's no way that you can equate that. I have not found a soil scientist who believed that it was possible to equate that with the incredibly diverse biology, both micro and macro. I mean, I've talked to a soil zoologist who said, well, there's all these other critters that are critical to the process too, that you can equate the two. They're different systems. And so it's not that Colin and Karen shouldn't do what they do. They should. It's wonderful. They believe in it. They're proud of it. You know, they should just call it something besides organic, because it is not organic, and a great many people don't agree with them.
Well, okay, you know, that leads us
to buy their food. They just shouldn't call it organic.
Okay, that's your opinion. Now, that leads us to a good question from the studio audience. Josephine, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I was curious how and how often the organic standard is regulated.
Wow. Let's see. Let's go to Karen and Colin. What do you think? How often is the organic how often do they make changes in that organic standard?
Well, in my opinion, that's one of the problems with the Organic Standards Board is because they meet twice a year and they make changes frequently, which is to say the standards aren't so standard. And I think that's one of the problems and why we're having this discussion, because all of a sudden a new group of people came on and decided to say, let's change the standards, which inherently makes it not a standard. So I think there's upsides to having the National Organic Standards Board, because it does create a place of democracy within the industry. But if we're constantly changing the standards, then they aren't standards, and that's what we're discussing today.
Well, that's always one of the most interesting things about the government, is that it seems to be a place where everybody goes to get things done, and those who have the most money get the most things done. And do we see that activity in the National Organic Standards Board, David?
Yes, I'm sorry to say we do. I mean, one of the great dilemmas, you know, there was a great opportunity of having the feds take over organic certification, but we all knew that it was a tremendous risk. And, you know, we're at a place where there's tremendous corporate influence being applied to mold and shape the standards. And it's a constant struggle between the traditional organic community and the corporate ag that wants to get the label because it's very good, you know, there's a very good economic return if you can get certified, but they don't want to change how they farm to meet the standards. They want to change the standards to meet how they farm.
And, you know, Melody Meyer made an interesting comment with respect to this conflict. She's with United Natural Foods.
Natural.
And she said that the conflict is between two parts of the organic community, the trade and the movement. Karen, how would you describe those two parties, the trade and the movement? What does that mean?
Well, I'm going to say the trade. I mean, we're organic farmers, and we're also organic consumers. We do not want pesticides or chemicals in our food. We would not grow something that we wouldn't eat and feed it to you. And so for us, we're very proud of our practices. As far as, so what was your question on the second part? You want the...
Well, the question was, you know, Melody Myers from United Natural Foods, you know, made the comment that this is a conflict between two parts of the organic community, the trade and the movement. So there is a business, and then there is the movement. So what is the trade, and what is the movement?
You know, I would tell you that, you know, as organic farmers, we're really proud to be part of this community. We grow organic food, and we feed our community organic food. For me, that is the movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it really being true to ourselves and being true to our planet, being true to the actual quality of our food, and making organic food available to all? That's our goal. That's our movement.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pitch that same question to David Chapman, who is directly opposite you folks in San Diego, all the way across America, in Vermont, at Long Wind Farms. I'm going to ask him what the difference is then between the trade and the movement right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour. Today, we're talking with Karen and Colin Archipelay from Archie's Acres in San Diego, California, and David Chapman from Long Wind Farm way up there in Vermont, kitty corner across the United States of America, over the issue of whether hydroponic food should be considered organic or should they not. I guess the situation with respect to the National Organic Board seems to be one of confusion. And when things are confused, everybody can do pretty much what they want, which is what the state of organic was before they made it legal. Anybody could call themselves organic and get away with it because there was no government-regulated word for it, and away we went. And then one day the organic farmers got together and said, well, we better get this under control. So they gave the authority to the federal government to regulate organic. And so that's kind of where we're at today. But, David, what is the, you know, Melody brought up the notion that there's an internecine squabble between the trade and the movement. What do those two parties mean to you? Who are they?
I actually thought that Melody got that really, really right. She, you know, identified the conflict here. And I think that the movement has this belief in healthy soil, fertile soil, producing superior food. And the trade is obviously more focused on making a profit out of that. And, you know, when we started the organic movement in this country, or when I started in it, whatever, 35 years ago, we were welcoming the trade in. And we still welcome the trade in the sense that we want the organic movement, the real organic movement, to grow. But we don't want it to grow at the expense of what it actually stands for. And the problem with the trade is that sometimes they become aligned just with large corporate producers. And you get a group like the Organic Trade Association, and one big producer can really sway the conversation because, after all, they are the Organic Trade Association. So that's who they're representing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where this conflict comes, yeah.
So, you know, sooner or later we have to come to grips with the fact that we have a little chaos here. And is there a way of squaring this away, making a decision one way or another, or do you see a squabbling just back and forth? David?
Yeah. Well, the Crop Subcommittee of the National Organic Standards Board did just make a new proposal to be voted on. And it is basically a clarification of the 2010 recommendation. The 2010 recommendation, the reason that the National Organic Program gave for not acting on it was that it wasn't clear about containers. It was clear that hydroponics should not be permitted, but it wasn't clear about, well, what happens if you put soil in a box? Is that, you know, can you give it liquid feed? Is that hydroponic or not? And they've come up with a pretty ingenious proposal trying to basically limit the amount of liquid feed that you can add to that in a box. And if you can do it, if you can grow it in soil and it's primarily getting its nutrition from the life in the soil, from the organic matter and the minerals in the soil, then you got it, and it would be certified. And we'll see what happens in November when that comes up for a vote.
Well, what do you think, Karen and Colin? Is that a good idea?
In regards to Dave's comment or your original question?
Well, let's start with Dave's comment with respect to what's their proposal in front of the National Organic Board or program, that there be a modification of what can be. You can grow organic in a bucket as long as most of the nutrition comes from the soil within the bucket. Does that make sense to you?
Well, no, because nobody has defined what soil is, for one. Some would say it's got to be connected to the upper layer of earth. Some would say compost fits the definition of soil, mm-hmm. and so forth. So there's no clear definition on what soil is in these regards. Furthermore, I think it is hilarious to say that compost tea is less organic than compost, or fish emulsion in liquid form is less organic than fish emulsion in a dry form. And the fact that we're having this discussion means we're not actually talking about the production system at hand. We could talk about inputs all day, which, by the way, we all have to abide by the same rules when it comes to inputs. I have this report in front of me written by Dr. Mercola, who says that hydroponic farmers use chemicals. Hydroorganic farmers have to go through the same process that Dave Chapman has to go through in order for us to get approved to use the inputs that we're allowed to use. So this idea that what form an input comes in regards to whether it's liquid or dry makes it more or less organic. There's no science to back that up at all.
Okay, I would go along with you on that, having used a lot of fish emulsion in my time and kelp emulsion and all kinds of good things that you can maybe put into water and feed the soil with and thus feed the organisms in that soil. But when we come back, I'd like to ask both of you, what happens when we keep pressuring the official definition of what is organic? If we keep changing it, if we keep adding new avenues that people can use organic and make the trade more vibrant, and we keep changing a word, what happens to the word? And if that happens to the word, what happens to the industry? This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at MetroFarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Oh, yeah, so much to say, so little time to say it. Always works like that. Let's go quickly to the phones. Let's pick up Steve, who has a comment about labeling, which is what it always gets down to. Steve, welcome aboard.
Hello.
You're there.
Why can't you just label it hydroponic organic, or organic hydroponic, and the other one hydrogranic soil? And let it go at that, and let the consumer decide which ones they want to go for. Let the marketplace decide which is best.
David, there's a question for you.
Sure. I don't support that because I don't think it's organic. But I understand why the hydroponic people would want that. And it's better than what we have now, which is nothing. But I don't support it, no.
Okay.
It's not organic.
Davey up in Vermont, what about you?
I would have a question to the Archies. Now, the way that the Crops Committee's proposal has come forth, from my understanding of their operation, they would not qualify as to be organic. Now, what do they plan to shift to containers like the Big Boys? Wholesome Harvest would qualify, probably, have to switch their operation around. Seems to me that they're getting thrown under the bus by the big hydros.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Colin, you want to take that?
Well, we're getting trying to be thrown under the bus by a lot of different groups, to include Cornucopia and the likes of Dave Chapman. But we're going to continue to fight for what we believe is right. We're going to continue to fight for sustainability. I 100% agree with the previous callers about let the consumer decide. And we market how we grow. We encourage consumers to get to know their farmers and buy at will.
Okay.
We're doing what we're doing because we believe it's right. And we think truth and science and the consumers are on our side, not market protection and special interest.
Let me ask you this real quick question. What happens as we keep amending the word organic? We keep allowing more things into it. Sooner or later, it seems to me like the word is going to disappear. Colin?
Or you're going to have organic available for everyone. Why are we not encouraging all people to grow organically? Why do we want to have just a select group of people that can say, oh, I'm organic, but you can't be?
Well,
we want it to be inclusive.
I don't think it's about people. Karen, I don't think it's about people. I think it's about the technology. David?
The technology is 600 BC. We're not talking about new technology.
Okay.
This dates back to the Hanging Gardens of Babylon and the floating Aztec gardens. This is not new. In the history of our planet, anytime you have constriction on water, you'll see hydroorganics come up. And hydroorganic is everywhere in nature.
The only thing that's changed is our understanding of what occurs in soils and their understanding that the soil particle, which is for the most part inert in California, is mainly...
Okay, but nobody's answering my question. David, what happens when we just keep adding things to the word organic? What is going to happen to it?
And is it organic is going to fairly rapidly move to become a meaningless term like natural has become. Organic actually means something to a lot of people. I understand it means something different to Colin and Karen, but it means something else to a lot of people, not just tomato producers, many consumers, many eaters. And as they see that the organic label no longer represents what they mean by organic, When they see that there's CAFO eggs and CAFO...
And there, we're out of time. Thank you both very much for helping us figure out both sides of this issue. It's a tough one, but that's life, right? Thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.